Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Gardening Show. Today we have our familiar voices here. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But our number, the telephone number on this call-in program, 800-348-2551. Gardeners, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back.
You don't sound all that enthused. In fact, these two didn't say anything. Fred's like, it's great to be back. Let's start again. Gardeners, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here.
All right, now you're...
I thought you meant the gardeners who were listening.
Oh, well, gardeners at home, come on in, wash your hands, and give us a call at 800-348-2551. So what's new, gentlemen? Anything?
Oh, everything.
This has been quite the march, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Wow.
We're saying we're 2 weeks ahead. We literally have no idea. It could be more than that.
Now, what happens when the weather gets very cold on Saturday and, I guess, Sunday?
That's a good question.
I've already started hearing that question come in to
my,
me.
My advice is not a lot will happen.
Right.
It depends on how cold it gets, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be quite cold enough.
Teens and 20s.
Right? It really depends on how far things have moved to be affected by that cold, and everything, you know, is different. So in my neighborhood, just after I had a little lunch before I got in the car.
Oh, good for you.
I did. Thanks. I did see a star magnolia starting to open. This is a warm spot magnolia in Great Barrington. Yeah. This is typically blooming probably the 15th of April, something like that. So that's where I get the 2 weeks from.
Okay, well, that's not that far ahead.
That plant is notorious for not being very happy about cold. It's a very sensitive, the flowers are very sensitive to cold. So that will be an indicator plant for me, for sure. But there is a little bit of forsythia showing some color. It'll get through it.
Worst case is on some things that have pushed out some flower bud, that the buds may get burned, the flower buds may get hurt a little bit. But in general, things that are growing and have been for the last year in the spot where they are generally shouldn't see too much damage. If you buy something, we've got a lot of plants at the garden center that came in from Connecticut or New Jersey that are advanced. And if you buy something like that and plant that this weekend, you might want to cover it. Because it's not quite hardened off yet.
And generally, it's flowers we're talking about.
It's generally flowers.
It's not the plant itself. It's about enjoying the bloom that you may have just received and wanting that to last.
Yeah, that's the worst case scenario is the bloom we're talking about. The plants themselves, this is not going to affect health much.
And snow won't matter?
No, it'll be real good, lot. Actually, if you got a little snow.
Yep.
If you get real wet snow, stick to things.
That'd be good.
Yeah, breakage. We'll start getting breakage issues, which it's probably going to be wet, but we don't know.
The daffodils might get patted down a little bit.
Yeah, you've got a lot of spring stuff happening, bulbs starting to push. So I've even seen some blooms, actually, with daffodils.
So nobody's too worried.
We're not too worried about it.
No, but there is potential for some dieback, some loss of bloom.
What's more exciting is we've had a good, compared to last year, a good 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks, most of the month of March, to actually do some gardening, which is really fun to get out there, clean up. Then it dried out. Now you can be edging, transplanting. We've done a lot of that already, which are things you can almost never do in March.
But if you transplant, isn't the time just after you transplant a sensitive time for a plant? What if it gets really cold?
Well,
isn't that the time you have to worry?
Sometimes you're moving things before they really wake up.
They're still dormant.
It's like taking a baby in one room, he's sleeping, move him to another room, he's still sleeping, he wakes up, he doesn't know he's moved. Well, that's a good analogy for some of these dormant plants, the ones that are not actively awake.
Very good.
Very good work, Fred.
Well, I have a couple of kids, a lot of plants, and a couple of kids, I'm starting to get good at this stuff.
I think we've hit the zen high point of the show. We might as well just cancel the rest of it. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Susan in West Haven, Vermont. Susan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a recurring annual problem. I get my annuals around Memorial Day by six packs. I was told I should deadhead them so they'll branch out and flower more. But I do that. I stick them in the ground, But then I don't get any flowers until July. Am I doing something wrong?
Yeah, sort of depends on what they are.
The regular annuals like petunias and
what happens is you have this plant that's been rooting heavily and growing, and it has all these flowers on it. And what that to deadhead it is to suggest that you will get it to rebranch. So you pinch the tip off, which includes the flower. Then it will rebranch and do that again. And yeah, that will take a couple of weeks to recover.
It does. It's horrible.
So no, you don't have to do that. That is not okay. That is not mandatory, and you can enjoy those first few blooms. What I would recommend is take a look at it. If they stay nice and full and well developed, then leave them alone. But if they kind of get a little leggy, then pinch them then, and that may be 2 or 3 weeks later.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye now. Number to call is 800-348-2551. The Gardening Show on Vox Pop. John in Rhinecliff is next. John.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I have a question. I have a trumpet vine, which is very mature now, and it's planted too close to my garden, and it's invading everything, and I just wanted to know the best way to kill it and get as many roots as possible.
Well, you want to get rid of it. You don't think moving it's an option, like transplanting it?
Well, it's very, very big.
It's big.
I mean,
old
it's
one.
Been probably 15 years there.
So you don't want it anymore?
I could move it, but it's going to be its trunk is nearly as thick as a little tree.
Yep. You could cut it back pretty well. A few options if you don't want to get rid of it. One of them would be you could cut it back pretty severely. They are vigorous, uh-huh. and they do tend to respond okay to pretty severe pruning. So an option is cut it way back, kind of get it back to close to where it used to be. Heavy cutting.
It's all the volunteers that are in the garden that I want to get rid of. I'd like to keep it there.
Yep. Otherwise, digging up those volunteers, trying to get as much of that root is going to help.
It's going to be a never-ending process. If you don't want it there, you know, you may want to take one of those volunteers and put it somewhere else where you'd like to
have
it.
And that might be a better way, and then go for it.
And then just rip the old one out, because it's going to keep coming back on you forever.
Yep. The one way to wear any plant out, and I've said this to people over a lot of years, is wait for, like, if you cut it back right now, that's not going to be super conducive to getting rid of it. It could actually help encourage growth, because a lot of that energy is all in the root system right now, so that's not ideal timing. So what you want to do is let that plant flush out using all of its stored energy. And then is no photosynthesis happening until after this thing is completely flushed out. At that point, you cut it back, and before it gets a chance to really start to make its own food. And in the process of that, what will happen is it'll give usually another secondary, sometimes even third flush of growth. Every time you see it flush out growth, keep cutting it, and you'll wear it right out. It will decline rapidly.
It could take you years to do it that way, but it's an easier way to do it than trying to rip the thing out.
Yeah, sometimes it'll go quicker. Certain plants go faster.
Right.
I mean, I had really good
dogs.
Would the systemic make any sense? And would that damage other plants in the garden?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily damage other plants as long as you didn't get it on the other plants. It's contact only. But I would try the
herbicides you can apply to the stump if you
to the
cut
stump
it.
To the stump. Right.
That would be just applied to the top of the stump.
But I would try waiting for it to flush out first. Cutting it back before it has a chance to really sit there and make food. Let it reflush again. Do it again. Let it reflush again. You'll have 3 shots. I bet what you have left is going to be very weak and much easier to manage.
All right, John, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Emily, you're on.
Hello, Ray and gardeners.
Hello.
I believe I heard you say on a previous gardening show that a rhododendron is something you can cut to the ground. I have one that was sort of like a throwaway that my partner brought home, and it's really weirdly lumpy and lopsided. It has nice pink flowers every May, but I would like to shape it differently. And so I thought I heard you say last fall you can cut a rhododendron all the way down to the ground, and it'll come back sort of more evenly and happier.
Well, rhododendrons are one of the plants. There's a lot of them. And lilac is another really common one that what we call is rejuvenation pruning is done on. And rejuvenation is taking the really old plant away and getting it to send up a bunch of new sprouts or shoots that can now be trained into a better looking, maybe more manageable shrub. The first thing I would say, though, is if you have an option to maybe selectively cut it back, and you could do it pretty right after it blooms, let it bloom out, and then selectively take it back and try to make it more, if that's an option, to shape it, it'll be, you'll get a bigger plant faster with recurring blooms next year.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to try the rejuvenation pruning, you would wait for the buds to kind of start to really swell up, which is close to now, and then you would actually cut it pretty much right to the ground, and then it will resend up sprouts, but it could take a while before it becomes a larger plant.
I did that on a couple of rhododendrons at home.
It's slow.
It's 2 or 3 years
it's
before
a couple of years
it really starts
before
to look like anything again. So it depends on how patient you want to be.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's a very odd shape, and the canes are pretty old. It seems like all of them are old and weirdly shaped. And I'll have to ask Michael, because he's the one who brought it home, if he minds if it takes a couple of years. But what you are saying is if I want to try rejuvenation pruning, I should do it when the buds are swelling sort of soon. But if I want to try to just cut back the oldest stuff and leave some sort of bush, I should wait until after it blooms?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. If you do the rejuvenation, if you cut it back after it's already grown out, it's kind of like the guy that called up before and we're telling him how to get rid of the weed in his garden, try to get rid of the trumpet vine. Well, basically, it's the same thing. If it's flushing out using energy, if you let it use all its energy up and then you cut it, you don't get a real good regrowth. But if you cut it before it actually flushes out, all that energy, most of it's in the root system. And so that's why you, for rejuvenation on something you want, you cut it before it flushes out.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's The Gardening Show on Vox Pop, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.Kendall.org. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts. Where last year, students consumed 7,000 pounds of vegetables through the Wild Oats Healthy Lunch Program. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Capital Roots, celebrating 40 years of providing fresh food and green spaces for the Capital Region. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for details.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here. It's The Gardening Show. We're joined by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. And this one came in from Jen in Southern Dutchess County, who says we're about a month ahead of daffodil blooming. They started opening in mid-March in Southern Dutchess.
Yeah,
I've seen some around the Capital District that are in bloom right now. So
I have an early, I don't know the name of an early one, small trumpet, kind of a creamy yellow that's been open for at least 2 weeks.
Hmm. All right. Over to the phones again we go. And line four, it's Bill in Latham. Bill.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two fence rows of burning bush. One's about 9 bushes. The other was 5. These are fairly tall. They're like 7, 8 feet tall. About 5 years ago, the middle bush in the row of 5 just like collapsed, like 2-3 days, it went from looking as healthy as the other ones to nothing. And, you know, I left it in for a while, but it never came back. And last fall, I had the same thing happen to one of the bushes in the row of 9. Like, it's like 3 in from the end. Do you have any idea what I should be looking for with this?
Well, there's a couple things. You know, depending on the time of year, if they get chewed by rabbits, burning bush are very attractive to rabbits, and they'll come and eat the bark. Now, typically that's done over the winter, so they'd start to leaf out in the spring and then collapse. It's not usual that they do it in the summer, although it's possible. The other thing you'd watch for would be spider mite. They're very susceptible to spider mite.
Okay.
And that could happen in the summertime when it gets hot, and they'll just drop all their leaves real quick.
One was in the fall. It was like last September, October that it collapsed.
Huh. could have been mine.
There certainly is, and I don't know. I've never really looked into it. We don't sell burning bush in Massachusetts.
Really?
So
we don't in New York either anymore.
Why?
It's listed as an invasive species.
It's still saleable, but you have to be careful with it.
Yeah.
Only if you have it
in an un.
Yeah, not buying new.
Right.
Okay.
What do you mean?
In other words, they can't buy new ones in and sell them in New York.
So they're already growing in New York.
But if you've got them in New York, they're letting people.
Is that really a problem? Do we need that legislation?
Yes. Well, invasive plants have been a real problem with biodiversity and natives.
But I mean, is that really? They're kind of nice looking plants.
Well, to give you an example, that's been said that you could walk around the entire. No, we're going to Hawaii real quick, but which is a great place to go. But you could walk pretty much around the entire big island, and everything around that entire coastline is not native. Everything is an invasive. Hmm. So we're talking about 90 percentile invasive. So left unchecked, that's why you end up with all of our swamps.
There are seven or eight woody plants that are doing similar things to the Northeast, and burning bush is one of them.
Yeah, it's not so much of a big problem in the capital district area. I find it much bigger problems downstate. I don't know. You might have a bigger problems where you guys are.
That said, getting just back to the question, there is a dieback, it may be actually insect related. Some little boring insect I have noticed in them in the past where they will look pretty good and then fail for no reason, as this gentleman said, late in the season.
But if it was an insect and there were several of these together at Bill's location, wouldn't all of them be affected?
Not necessarily. No.
There's one that is stressed. One gets the boring insect. That damages some part of the cambium that the plant dies.
You know, if a plant is a little wet or a little dry, there's something about that particular spot. I've seen rows of plants where there's 20 in a row, and three of them together will be stunted, and the others will be fine.
Huh. So yeah, it will pick out insects and diseases. Will find a stressed plant in the group. And the other thing that sometimes is another thing that potentially could cause that would be that sometimes they actually have like girdling sort of roots on burning bush.
On older ones.
And on older ones, they kind of, a lot of times you see their stems sort of, they almost choke themselves out. Self-decline. And it mostly has to do with root. And a lot of times on older ones, that is more common. That would also be an indicator of stress. So if it has that, now maybe more susceptible to an insect or disease.
All right, Bill, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. Joanne in Sharon Springs. Hello, Joanne.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm very concerned about these tulips that I planted this past fall. I'm a well-seasoned vegetable gardener, but I've not that experienced with flowers, and I'm they're up about 4 inches, and I'm wondering if I should protect them against the coming weather, the bitter cold this week.
No, they'll be fine.
Yep. The bigger thing that I would worry about is if they were going to get crushed by wet snow. So if you were worried about that, a little a flower pot turned upside down, empty flower pots.
We're talking about a lot, like $300 worth of bulbs.
I wouldn't really concerned. I would not worry about it.
As
you mentioned, about 4 inches, that's great. That's where they should be right about now because of the warm spring.
That.
So I wouldn't worry about them at all.
You'd almost do more damage covering them at this point than you would.
Okay, well, I'm glad I asked because I was really, really tempted to cover them up before we get, 15 degrees overnight weather.
If we get 10 or 5 degrees, then we're going to worry. But if they're talking around 20, we should be.
If we get even 5 degrees, the tulips will be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, tulips are cold hardy.
But not the tulips.
Joanne, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551. Adam in Schuylerville is next. Adam.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I was wondering what the best resource out there is for New York natives in landscaping. New York natives in landscaping.
You're looking for plant material?
Or actual landscapers from New York.
I'm trying to avoid burning bushes and multifloral roses, that sort of thing,
Yeah, well, in general, I think, natives are certainly in style right now, if you want to say that. There's a lot of sources. A lot of people are carrying more and more natives.
A lot of garden centers, including ourselves, and I'm sure, Greg, we have native sections for things that are specifically native to our area.
So if you go to your local garden center, you probably can find several New York native species.
Yep. And at the Landis plant sale in May, we always specialize in a lot of natives. And that'll be the week after Mother's Day. if you visit our website.
If you're looking for a resource to know what they are, I would assume the Extension Service does produce a handout for that. We have handouts at our garden center as well as to what is native to Massachusetts or to New England.
So Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Okay. Yep. And then other cheap sources, too, are a lot of times like Arbor Day Foundations do those giveaway trees, real cheap trees. Soil Water Conservation Districts often do that same kind of giveaways, or they're really cheap sales.
Native,
not always, but a lot of times are natives. So, but do know if you have a question about what's native, then that's another question, and you want to look into that.
Adam, thank you so much. Over to Cope in Poughkeepsie.
Here I am.
Hello.
Thank you for taking it.
You're on.
How do you get rid of that monster, Houtanyi?
Houtanyi.
Houtonia, I think is what she's saying.
What is it?
Which
it's
is
a ground cover.
Yeah.
It's a universal worldwide ground cover if you let it alone.
It's a little heart-shaped leaf that's has
it's the most aggressive, invasive plant I can imagine.
Well, I think if you dig it up on a regular basis, it will be.
I pick it out. I dig up the roots. You leave one little inch, and you've got a whole bed of them.
Yeah. Are they pretty?
They're quite pretty.
They're effective.
We don't want them
cover
in the lawn and all of everywhere else. They just keep coming up.
Really not hardy for us. We don't have too much of that around in our area.
But no.
I would consider digging it. If it's in a ground cover area and you want to replant something else, you definitely will have to remove it before you plant something else. If it's in or near a lawn area and you want to just not worry about it, if you start mowing it, it should not come through.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, and then smothering things in general, too. If it's in an area where you could smother it with, like, a black plastic, something.
I can do that.
That works, obviously, for some areas than others.
It's a plant that never should be sold, I think.
I know.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I'm curious. I mean, maybe since grass won't grow on my lawn, maybe this is something I can try.
I don't think it's hardy enough for him either.
No?
I'm not sure where she was from.
She was in Poughkeepsie.
She was in Poughkeepsie.
South
of us here. All right.
It's like the burning bush right around here. We've never had a problem at Arboretum with burning bush, but other places south of us do. We have we have a lot of our own problems. Bishop's weeds, another one of these nightmares, which probably could grow at your house.
Yeah, really?
It would.
Okay.
In fact, my lawn
is almost of biblical proportions. Nothing really will grow at this point.
If you need some, I'll bring a flat of that in, like Greg does.
Good. Another reason for the neighbors to be upset with me. That'll
be great.
There
you go.
Spread over to the lawns. Bob in Holland Patton. Bob, you're on.
Yes, they have a vine that grows tremendously. It grows right up trees and grows right up these 60-foot trees and back down again and just keeps going. Grows across the driveway, just barely under the ground and up trees across there. There's a brook that seems to emanate from this little tiny brook that's dries up in the summertime, and it's mostly runoff from the woods.
What color does it turn in the fall, the leaves?
Ah.
Do you know? Is it red, yellow, or yellow?
I don't recall.
It sounds like bittersweet,
color,
I think, to
me,
us.
It's green all the time.
Or could be a grape, depending on what he's doing.
It's covering a lot of different trees.
Where it comes across the ground and up to the trees, it gets
does it get an orange berry on it?
Does it get an orange berry on it, Bob?
No berries that I can ever recall.
Do the leaves look sort of, can you describe the leaf look at all? Small, round, big.
Oh, boy, what shape are the leaves?
I guess in some senses it doesn't matter, does it, in terms of how to get rid of it?
No. I mean, you could, like we said before, there are good vines and there are bad vines. There are some vines we call killers. One of the ones that we've, probably thinking that it might be is a one called bittersweet. Oriental bittersweet is an invasive, and it is a killer vine. It strangles its host. So you could sort of look at how this vine is growing up your tree, and that'll determine a little bit about what you might have there. If it's wrapping around a trunk of the tree, it's most certainly bittersweet.
It does that. It wraps around the trunk of the tree and grows all the way up and around the branches and loops over and comes back down. And I've seen some places where it's had a long growing season will return to the ground and regrow into the ground and travel further in.
I mean, cutting it off of the trees, cutting the base of it is the way in which you would kill it. And that sounds like a big job, and it is.
Yep.
And
you could
just
also
have
wait
to keep doing it. It's going to try to come back, and you cut it, and it's going to try to come back, and you cut it again.
Yep.
Mm. And I like did cut them all. I did cut them all in the fall. Oh, God, I think I was out there 3 or 4 hours cutting them all off.
Yeah, better, so this time around, when it starts to sprout, you probably won't have to spend as much time, and they'll be much smaller sprouts, so you'll just need a pair of hand pruners and just start cutting again.
Kind of wait for them to flush out and then cut them immediately.
Uh-huh.
You'll use more stored energy like we had been talking about. Stored energy, leave some out, cut them right after that, and they'll be weaker.
So mid-May. Thank you very much.
Hey, good luck, Bob. We appreciate it. Over to Barbara in Poughkeepsie. Barbara, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a question. We planted some lavender about 10 years ago, and the stems are very woody. We've never really done anything with it. I'm not really sure if we should be doing anything with it. It still produces flowers, but it's not very attractive.
Yeah, what's best to kind of make it more attractive is to do some pruning, in this case sort of renovation pruning, to get it to sort of sprout from the base more so that it has that softer, fuller, you know, sort of pincushion look. I would definitely recommend...
What time of year would that be?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend waiting until the plant is very active. So I would wait until, at this point, maybe mid-May or late May until the plant wakes up. And if you can cut back some of those woody stems, you should notice this crown at the base of the plant that has lots of little shoots. And if you have those, then yes, taking away any of that woody tissue is going to work really well. If you don't really see that little basal area of little shoots, then taking some of the wood out, so the going back to that kind of woody plant rule of one third of the plant comes out, let it start to sprout, cut back the other third. You could actually do it like a month later. You should end up with everything coming almost from the ground again. Does that make sense?
Okay. Some of those stems are about a half inch thick. Should I go for those? Or?
Yeah, so take a look at the plant. You're going to cut some of those out. You're going to then wait for another month for some growth, and then you're going to cut the rest of them out.
Okay, great.
All right.
Barbara, thank you so much. Over to Andrew in Beacon. Andrew, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I have a problem with road salt. I live in Beacon on a busy corner, and in the interest of public safety, even though they say these are safe salts, I suspect that I have a little corner wild area for birds and things, and they're not doing well. And between the snowblower and the snowplows, I suspect that what they're using is hurting my little wild bushes and things. What can I do, when and how much, to fertilize and neutralize the toxic effects of the salt?
Well, the typical item is gypsum that you use to neutralize salts, but its effectiveness will depend a little bit on how much salt there is there and how.
Oh, there's a lot. I pay people to snowblow the sidewalk because the children use it to go to school.
Sure.
And all of that, what's in the street gets plowed up on my sidewalk, and then it has to be snowblowed.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to snowblow it back into the street. So I'm getting a very heavy dose.
There are plants that are more tolerant of salt than others. You know, it may be that you just are not going to be able to grow certain things there, because that's going to be obviously a problem that continues on and on and on.
Can you know, I get mockingbirds that come in the garden, and they actually prefer to eat these little blueberries. I don't even know the names of the trees. They look like little tiny blueberries. Even if I give them food, they prefer.
Sure.
So I want to encourage that.
Sure. Sure.
So can you recommend something for me to grow, or besides putting gypsum in the ground?
Any thoughts?
Well, thanks, Bob.
I'm just going to take a break.
You have this piece between the sidewalk and the street, and you want to plant woody plants there?
Yeah, I have like little bushes.
Yeah. And so, but the snow gets piled there as well, correct?
Huh?
The snow also is piled there every winter?
Oh, they plow, and then they plow the street, and then they plow. And then as they plow, it comes on the sidewalk.
Right. So,
and then the city said you have to clean it no matter what.
Okay.
I pay people to snowblow.
Yes, I heard that.
Then they snowblow that stuff into the yard because you're not allowed to blow it back onto the street.
Okay. So there's not a lot of pressure on this spot. In other words, this spot is pretty soft. You could put some woody plants in there, and the snow would not be tossed on there to break them. That's correct?
Well, I have some woody bushes.
Yeah.
I don't even know the name of these little
bushes. So I'll name a few then. I'll give you a few names. Blueberries, you know, not only will the birds like them, but so will you. Various shrub form dogwoods, gray dogwood, Cornus racemosa, red twig dogwood, Cornus circea. These are really fun plants. The birds will even nest in them, and they also produce a fruit that will probably attract that mockingbird. So there's three of them.
Rosa rugosa might be another that's quite salt tolerant.
Yep. Rosa rugosa, very salt tolerant.
Gray dogwood would be another one too. I don't know
besides blueberry, which one is salt tolerant?
It's called a rugosa rose, Rosa rugosa.
Yep. Also, gray dogwood would also be something that is a wonderful wildlife plant. I mean, birds eat it up like crazy. It takes a lot to kill a gray dogwood. It's not always it's a native. It's not always a nice, ideal landscape shrub, but for a wilder area, for a place where
you're
really want
to get something that's going to survive.
Yeah, if you're looking for survivability, that would certainly work.
Exactly. I'm not looking for showy, fancy things that look nice.
There are things like mountain ash too. There's a Korean mountain ash that actually is more tolerant than the other ones, and less problematic. There's quite a few options. If you want to get a hold of us independently too, you can reach me at fred@landisarboretum.org, and those guys, you can get a hold of us.
Yeah, wardsnursery.com. If you go to the website, you can email us.
And even if you
we'll
just Google salt tolerant plants,
that's what I
was saying.
Google that.
And,
try to get it from a site that says like EDU or university or not everything on the internet, believe it or not, is believable.
Believe that. The number to call is 800-348-2551. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting its fourth annual Lake George Hikeathon, July 5th. Early bird registration until April 30th, LakeGeorgeHikeathon.org. George Heigl, Cowan's representative, specializing in evaluating, marketing, buying, and selling of jewelry, fine art, historic firearms, American Indian art, and more. 518-369-7994. Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, providing hotel amenities and a historic bed and breakfast setting with a heated pool, fireplaces, wraparound porches, and private balconies. UnionGables.com. And the New York State Maple Producers Association, hosting Maple Weekend open houses April 2nd and 3rd. Find a sugar house at mapleweekend.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Oh, the fun we have here on a gardening show. 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves join me today, and you at home. Let's go to Layla in Mount Tremper. Layla.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to respond to the caller who was looking for a source of native New York plants. There's a wonderful place called the Catskill Native Nursery in Cahokia, New York. The couple that run it are very knowledgeable, very dedicated, and there's a range of, it's pretty expensive, flowers, bushes, trees, all kinds of stuff that's native to New York and native to the Northeast, and they're just incredibly knowledgeable. I always have a total blast when I go there. I learn a lot, and it's been a good source for me, so I wanted to pass that on.
Well, thanks, Layla.
Nursery in Cahokia.
Appreciate the call. Over to Sean in Kinderhook. Sean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question. I have some tulips that I purchased from the supermarket. Inevitably, they're going to go to tulip heaven. What I was told was if I dug up the bulbs and put them in a bag and froze them and then brought them back outside and then replanted them, it would they would grow again.
Wow. I wonder if that works with Ted Williams' head. Grow a whole new body?
Sounds like a lot of work. What I would recommend is that you enjoy the pot of bulbs and as they bloom, and when they're done blooming, you sort of slide them off to the, you know, the corner outside maybe, and just, we want to get through this cold weather because they do think it's May, that particular container you have. So we'll wait another week or two and then plant the whole thing, take it out of the pot, into the ground in the garden where you hope for it to come up next year.
Oh, okay.
Keep the leaves intact. Allow them to stay there nice and green. Water it well. Maybe a little fertilizer would be helpful until they finally yellow. And when they yellow, you can cut them back. When you do that, plant it deeper than it is now. It's only, those bulbs are only about an inch under the soil surface, and you want about 4 or 5 inches of soil on top of those bulbs.
Yeah, so you don't need to freeze them. You just want to get them planted.
Right. I don't know. Just somebody told me that you could trick them into thinking it was winter and then replant them and they'd grow again.
Yeah, that's not what you want to do, though. You want to let them grow.
Yeah, let them, and then they're going to go dormant, and then the cold's going to come, and then they're going to, you know, you're going to get blooms next year.
You can't trick them into blooming again this spring.
Yep.
They have to go through the cycle.
Okay.
All right, Sean, great call.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Over to, let's see, it's Bob's turn. Bob in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hi, I've got another survivability question.
Okay.
I've got a fenced area in my backyard where my two dogs play. I reseeded it last spring, and with these two chasing each other and romping around, they've pretty much dug it up. And I guess I need to reseed it again this spring.
Yep.
But I wonder if you have any advice on what I should do so maybe it lasts through more than one season.
Yeah, it's a little tricky because
rotate.
If you can get the dogs to change that sort of perimeter, that would be great. But otherwise, there are certain
turfs. I can
turfs.
Keep them in a smaller area.
Yeah, give it a chance to establish, like reestablish once you seed it, because very young turf is really, really fragile. And
they're basically plowing it up.
You're plowing it up.
Out
yeah, it looks like a horse paddock.
Sure, it does.
Yeah. But once
it
grows a good root system.
Three playing areas, three different ones, and you have just like their. You know, just like they're grazing animals, you have to move them from one to the other.
Yep.
You know, if you wanted to make the process go quicker, you can sod it, but that gets pretty pricey.
That
after
can be
a
expensive. Yeah. How long should I leave it after the seeds have sprouted?
Oh boy.
Oh, you would. I mean,
weeks.
I would give it months.
Yeah. Three mowings, four mowings.
Yep. A few months probably in there.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Give it a good. The more root you have, the better and more solid that turf is going to be. And do look for, there are some grasses, just so you know, that are way more susceptible to traffic, foot traffic, and there are other ones that are a lot tougher and more.
Some of them are called heavy traffic types.
Heavy traffic turf.
They'll have types of turf type tall fescues in them that will tend to hold up better.
You got it. They're made to beat on them a lot better. So you definitely want it. So that's a big part of it, too. Get the right seed in there and then give it time to really establish. And then, as Greg said, think of them as grazing animals at this point. Move them a couple of two, three different areas so you're able to really get good establishment each time you see it and think it'll work out. Just curious, what kind of dog those are?
We lost him.
Oh, I was wondering if it was a lab because my dog.
Does it matter?
No, but
the bigger the worse.
The bigger the worse. Yeah, that's for sure. Labs tend to be rough, I think.
Okay, I get it.
On everything.
All right. So,
but I love him.
All right, thanks for that. Marcel in Pittsfield, you're on. Marcel.
Hi, I've got a question about asparagus.
Okay.
I tried it over 10 years ago and didn't have much luck with it and kind of gave up on it. And I was thinking about doing it again. And I noticed, happened to be in the big box store and saw the asparagus stuff in the bag. And it said on there that you should plant it with rhubarb. Is there a particular reason for companion planting with rhubarb? Does it help it? Does it protect
it? Not that we know of, no. I think they're similar in that you can plant them at the same time. They're often available at the same time. That's probably what they were referring to.
The trick with asparagus is your soil preparation ahead of time. The more effort you put into producing that asparagus bed, because, you know, asparagus is something that's going to outlive us. It's there for a long time. So really prepare that soil well with compost and manures and things like that before you plant it.
Make sure that what you're buying is well hydrated, still alive, not dry.
Now, I was curious about the rhubarb because I have planted rhubarb and it tends to be a bit invasive. And I figured if anything, it would probably choke the asparagus out.
Yeah, you wouldn't plant them together.
Yeah, they would have two different spots. I mean, next to each other is fine, but two different spots.
Okay, but okay. I just wanted to check and see, because I couldn't figure out why there'd be any particular reason if the rhubarb protected it or...
No, not a companion plant association that we're aware of.
Just at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Same timing. So I'm guessing that's probably where that came from.
Yeah. Okay, I was just curious to find out. Thank you.
Thanks, Marcel. We appreciate it. Let's go to Eliza in Ballston Spa. You're on.
Oh, hello. How are you this afternoon?
Hi.
I was calling about Japanese knotweed.
Oh, boy.
I have a problem with this. Are you familiar with the knotweed?
Oh, very familiar. Yes.
Okay.
The word problem and knotweed go together.
They do. Yeah. It's one of the ones we battle.
So I had a patch that was probably 3 by 6 feet two summers ago. I didn't know what it was. A friend was over and started tearing it out of the ground. He said, you got to get rid of this. So after plucking every little sprout that was an inch and a half tall several times over, covered it with black plastic, I finally killed that patch out. But now I have a very large area of knotweed that I was going to have killed and try to rake out all of the roots that I can and then do the black plastic thing again. However, I've heard you say several times about letting it go and get it stored energy out.
Well,
cut it.
Anytime any plant, in particular with woodies, and this is not really a woody, so this is a little bit harder to get rid of. It's like the bishop's weed kind of plant. It's a tough one. And tilling it usually breaks up a lot of that root but doesn't actually get rid of that kind of stuff.
Right.
Smothering it certainly would work. Constant mowing. If you're in a spot
I've read that mowing's bad, though, that any little piece that your mower kicks out will root.
No. You won't find it in a lawn.
No, you won't find it in lawn. It doesn't spread that way. But the little pieces left in, like the bishop's weed, if you do tilling and then little root pieces left, that will easily spread.
As Fred has explained before, what you're trying to do basically is starve the underground root structure. You want it to push out growth, cut it off. Push out growth, cut it off. Push out growth, cut it off.
I let it start to, I guess, grow this spring and then cut it off?
Yes.
I would, yeah, because cutting it now is just getting rid of a lot of dead top. There's nothing in that plant to be gained.
No.
Let that root system flush. Let it use up energy, and we're in a starvation. Remove your plant through starvation process.
Okay.
If you want to use the plastic idea and you want to just cover it all now and it's fairly smooth and clean and tidy, you don't have to wait to do that.
That's fair.
Just go ahead and cover now.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I will do this afternoon. Okay.
Yeah, and if it's tall, you cut it back right now and then lay the plastic.
Say it again, Eliza.
Sorry.
Do you have time for one more question for me?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so you mentioned the spider gnat or the spider mite on some gentleman's burning bush. I have those on my indoor fig tree.
Okay.
Okay.
How are they getting inside, and how can I stop them from coming in?
Boy, they just move on air currents. They'll come in on your clothes. They're so small that they float
in the
air. So use an insecticidal soap or a horticultural oil or something of that sort on those. That's a contact killer. But make sure that you get on the underside of the leaf because that's where they are.
Okay.
Yep.
If you have a lot of leaves that have been damaged already, they're discolored already, you really can see it, you go ahead and pinch all of those leaves off.
Yeah.
And just leave. I mean, you really can defoliate this plant right now, and it won't mind, so that you have very few leaves. That gives you just a lot. It's a lot quicker to spray that plant.
Thanks, Eliza. We appreciate the call. It's The Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward, and yours truly, Ray Graff. Over to Megan or Megan in Amherst?
It's Megan.
Hi, Megan. You're on.
Hi. I am curious. I have a front yard that had half of, like, a fir bush, F-I-R, and half Pachysandra. And my former husband, it was like his Waterloo to get rid of the fir bush. So that's gone. And the idea was that the Pachysandra was going to spread. And I sowed it, and I did everything like my gardening neighbors advised me to do. And it hasn't spread. So what do I do?
Okay.
So you have a weak patch of Pachysandra. Is that what you're saying? You have this patch of Pachysandra that's
not
very
doing that well.
Thin.
It's
thin. There's soil showing. It's just not doing anything. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, well, the Pachysandra is doing great.
So
where
it looks
was
good
in the beginning. It hasn't spread over to where the fir bush used to be.
Oh, so you got a bare spot.
So you need
that
to
you want to have
move some Pachysandra over there.
Yep.
Right. And I've transplanted it. I've taken cuttings.
You really
you know,
have
one
to
of my
go
neighbors was like, no, you have to braid it.
You have to go through that area where there is no pachysandra, and you got to loosen that soil up, and it's probably very compacted with that other plant that was there. It may take a pick or a strong shovel. Pachysandra likes to move through soft ground. If it's really hard, it's not going to spread well. So there's some soil prep required here.
Okay, so just go
chew it up, mix some organic material in, peat moss, cow manure, or something
like
that.
Make it into a nice garden like you're going to plant your lettuce
exactly.
in it.
Exactly.
Okay. My other question was about somebody previously was talking about invasive vines.
Yep.
And so, like, I have what my neighbor calls the pickle vines.
Okay.
I imagine that's not the real name, but
nope.
I mean, I spend hours every spring trying to get rid of them.
You know, like, is it a woody? Does it have a woody stem, or is it more of a thing that grows in the spring from nowhere? Doesn't have a woody stem.
It seems more delicate than woody.
That's what I was thinking too. A pickle vine. I'm thinking maybe it's that cucumber plant, that cucumber vine, which could be really weedy. But I think just pulling it like crazy should get that out of there.
Yeah, I mean, if it's an herbaceous vine, it's not woody. Try to recognize it as it starts to come up and start to cultivate that area. As we've said before, if you disturb that area, mulch that area, black plastic that area, those kinds of things should slow it down. And it's about getting to it before it gets too big.
Megan, we got to go. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Donna in Galway. Donna.
Hi there.
Hi.
I am so excited that I just received a hand-grafted weeping pussy willow.
Mm-hmm.
But the growing instructions I really need help with. Are you familiar with that type of plant?
Yes.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. It says, right now it has the silvery little kitty toe that is covered with the yellow. Are those the stamens?
It's the pollen. Yep.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Then it says, after flowering, cut back to within 4 inches of the stem. Pussy willows will flower.
So that is the flower.
That is
what
the
you
flower.
See now.
Okay, that's actually what I had figured out. So
is this something?
Am I going to be successful planting it in this area outside?
Yes. However, it does think it's ahead of schedule. So it's one
okay.
of, it doesn't realize what that we're in March. It's thinking, you know, maybe mid late April. It doesn't want to see any freezing temperatures. So
correct.
If you can continue to keep it protected, it doesn't have to be super warm, but just not freezing until we get to, say, in this case, maybe even May.
Yeah.
And
then put it in the ground.
And then plant it. Yeah.
All right. Donna, thank you so much. Very quickly, let's go over to Christy in Cummington, Mass. Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two quick questions.
Okay.
One is, I have a couple of peach trees. Last year, they put out tons of peaches, and then they all got moldy and fell off. So I cleared away as much of the leaves and debris, and I've trimmed them this spring, but I'm wondering what I should do about that.
Okay.
So if the peaches got moldy themselves, they had like a little mold on them. Is that what you're saying?
They looked beautiful, and they were starting to ripen, and then they just all turned moldy and fell off.
We have about 30 seconds.
So that's called botrytis. It's pretty common on peaches. That compost tea you have might have been helpful at preventing that. You do have to control diseases. Fungicides are organic or what otherwise have to be applied before you see the problem or just when you're seeing the problem. So spraying the plant with a fungicide, could be compost tea, will help control the botrytis.
And your second question?
Well, it has to do with compost tea because I actually made up some compost tea or what I thought was compost tea, and I did put it around that tree, but I was afraid maybe I had waited too long or if that was part of the problem. So how do you make compost tea?
It's delicious. Not about how you make it. It's that it is the spray you put on the fruit. So you're getting the fruit, the actual fruit wet and the leaves with the compost tea.
Any fungicide has to be applied to the problem. It's not a, it's not going through the system. It's have to
and
be
once you see it, it's too late.
It's too late.
So it is definitely a preventative, not a cure once it's there.
All right, we're out of time. Okay. Now, with the compost tea, do you take it with lemon or with cream?
Either way.
Mine could have some lemon in it.
Delicious. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. Support comes from Capital Region Language Center, offering language classes in Spanish, French, Chinese, Korean, and Latin at their locations, preschools and private schools, crlcalbany.org. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. And Flurry Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Providing information and advice for sprucing up current or adding new decks from exotic hardwoods to composite decking. Offering delivery, FlurryLumber.com. Thanks again to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls and the email. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy, our engineer. And your phones were answered by Deb Malik, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for news.